Welcome to the AquariumMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 58, recorded April 18th, 2011.
Greetings, everyone!
Hello!
We are a bit saddened.
Indeed.
By our recent attempts to upgrade our sound equipment.
And we have met with technological goofiness.
It has failed miserably. So we're back with our own old equipment, but we'll see what we can do in the future to upgrade that. But our first attempts at upgrading were dismal failures. So there we go.
We're very sad.
We will just try our best with what we've got for the moment. So sorry.
We are working on it.
Yes.
So we mentioned several times our Opayula and brine shrimp that are cohabitating. And we got them a present this weekend.
Yes, we did. We bought a small tank setup, one of the desktop nano setups that is in a, let's see, it's 1.5 gallon. I think it's a Water Wonders is the brand, Tetra Water Wonders 1.5 gallon. We're not getting any money from them to say this, but that's what we've got. And we just thought it looked kind of neat.
It's pretty.
Sort of
a picture up.
Cubic one. It has a little storage drawer in the bottom. It's got LED lighting. Not enough LED lighting to grow anything much, but probably
just
Java moss and so on.
Observe.
Yeah. But, of course, we're not going to be growing a lot of plants in that tank anyway. But it seems to be working just fine. I stripped down the filter so that it's not filtering anything out of the water because I want the brine shrimp to do that. So, yeah, maybe we'll put a picture up after we get it all the way finished setting up. But we've got it started, and it is looking kind of good. Mm-hmm. Kelly mentioned that she thought it was nifty, I believe the word she used.
It's a good word.
Yes.
Okay, so we have a cryptic message for you. Now,
yes.
We've talked a little bit in the past about hitchhikers in your aquarium. We talked about the darrow worms, and, you know, sometimes things just show up in your fish tank, and you didn't put them there, and they just hitchhike their way into the tank. So, and we will come back to this later, but
for now,
it would be fun to have it be cryptic for a little bit.
Yes.
If you find hitchhikers in your tank,
don't panic.
And let us know, just for fun, if you get the reference.
Yes. If you do get the reference, then contact us and let us know.
But and you get brownie points or
yes,
something.
Yes. There's something coming up that relates to this. Believe me, this is not a dead-end, silly one-liner throwaway joke.
Yeah, because it wouldn't be much of a joke.
No, it wouldn't, because you wouldn't even get it. But now, it does relate to fish, so don't worry about it. Okay, there we go.
There's a cryptic. Okay, we have some emails to go over. First, do you want to tell us about Carlos?
Yes, Carlos had some questions and so on Facebook. He said he purchased 5 CPDs, otherwise known as Celestial Pearl Danios, for a nano tank that he has had running for a while, and asked what the setup was. Somehow I missed that when
for
he
ours?
Asked. Well, yeah.
For our CPDs.
For our CPDs. I missed that in the email, even though I must have read it. I went on to the rest of the email and missed it, so I apologize for
well,
that.
Answer
Carlos.
You in here.
Yeah. I did mention on Facebook that it was a 10-gallon, but that's about as far as I went. Somehow, whatever. I don't know what my problem was. Anyway, the setup. The substrate is a little Tahitian moon sand, which I think I'm going to replace, because it's a bit messy, and the plants aren't as happy with that as they would be with something else. So I'm eventually going to have to replace that. The plants include the Windelove or lace Java fern, some needle leaf Java fern, some water sprite, and then just sort of randomly in there, a little duckweed, a little richa, as I call it, or rikya, as some people might call it, depending on how you pronounce it. And the, what else is in there? Do we have some other plants? I think so. I think we do, but I can't remember right now what they are. As far as critters, we've got lots of red cherry shrimp in there, a small school of Corydoras pygmaeus, 4 or 5 baby bristlenose catfish, one of them's albino, one of them's calico, and the other two are just normal colors. They're all siblings, At least I think they are. They're all related at any rate. A few assassin snails, and yeah, the tank was on do-it-yourself CO2 for quite a while. I've had it off do-it-yourself CO2 for some time now, and I have noticed an increase in algae growth, but I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I think I'll try changing the substrate before I play with CO2 again in there and see what happens. But it is indeed the setup that appears in my Celestial Pearl Denio's Eating Microworms video on YouTube. There are somewhere around 16 Celestial Pearl Denios in there now. I think most, if not all of them, were born here at our house from the original stock we purchased from the pet store, which, interestingly enough, I noticed they are much less shy and apt to hide than their parents were. So there you go.
Interesting.
Hopefully that helps a little bit.
Okay.
And Carlos also says that he put his in a 2.5 gallon. His nano tank is 2.5, and they seem to be doing very well so far. So, you know, if you want to put some pictures up of that, that'd be cool. We can put them up on Facebook or on the resources page or something.
Yeah.
If you want.
Okay, our next message was from Andreka.
Okay. It was actually a series of messages, in fact.
Kind of a back and forth.
Yes, and I do apologize that I wasn't able to help much in this case. But, and this is in no way a slight on anything that you've done, Andreka, I just thought you brought up some really great points that I'd like to talk about, even though it might be too late in this particular situation. Brought up some points that may or may not have applied in your situation, but could be of use to many other aquarists. So, hopefully that's okay if we talk about some of those things from that point of view. Basically, Andreka mentioned that she had in her tank a pandacori that looked as if it had lost weight, and indeed she sent some pictures and it did look like a rather thin pandacori. And she mentioned that it looked as if it were suffering. And one thing I have to say, and I know others have said similar things, it's difficult often to diagnose what is wrong with the fish, even with a picture. It is often useful to give as much information as you can, and then we might be able to, you know, give you some pointers that could help. And Andreka was very good about giving some very good information about the situation. And the more you give, the more likely we're able to offer something that might be of use. But, of course, I can't diagnose necessarily what's wrong with the fish. One, because diagnosis of that sort requires specialized equipment and so on. And I don't have I'm not a fish vet, of course. But that doesn't mean I can't maybe find something that could help. But it also means that I very, very likely can't do a whole lot.
Well, and it's hard to do over internet when you're not there with the fish.
Yeah, and even if I were, I may or may not be able to do something that could help. So, yeah, you're welcome to send me questions about specific fish situations, but when fish are ailing and so on, you can send those to us. I shouldn't say me, I should say us. But it doesn't mean necessarily that I can be of any use to, but I can give it a go.
We will do our best.
I can give it a go, and maybe it'll help. Okay. Now, one thing, this is a great question, Andreka asked, if she should put it over the in a net breeder box. For those of you who are familiar with those, a little like, it's one style of breeding trap where the walls of the enclosure are made of a mesh net, and the structures is usually, there's like sticks that interlock, plastic sticks that interlock. She asks, would the pandacori, would it be better to put it in the net box, or would it feel vulnerable and worse hanging out near the top? And later, she actually, in a subsequent message, answered her own question, saying it probably wouldn't be a good idea. And I agree, it wouldn't be, because in my experience, if you put a fish in an enclosure like that, they're usually not very happy. And it depends. There are exceptions. But generally, an adult fish that is used to the run of the tank and you put it in a net breeder like that, it's generally going to be stressed out. There are times when that is your only choice. I remember once I had a convict cichlid. Well, a pair of convict cichlids. And once they spawned, the female decided to rip the male to shreds. And so instead of having him being eaten, I put him in a net breeder. Not eaten, but at least beaten to bits. I put him in the net breeder for a few days until I could move him. That kind of thing, you know, that may work. But in general, if a fish is sick or something, I would much rather remove it to a hospital tank than keep it in a net breeder up near the surface. Let's see. The next is... she mentions that the pandas... We have been letting the pandas scavenge as we feed the members of the tank. Tubifex worms, brine shrimp, and blood worms. Those sound like some pretty good foods, depending, of course, on the state of the foods, too. I mean, tubifex worms, if they're freeze-dried, they should be fine. If they're live, they can be a vector for disease, and I kind of doubt you were using live ones, but just a word to the wise. A live tubifex worms can be a bit dangerous. Now, it is possible for quarry cats to starve in a tank that's getting tubifex worms, brine shrimp, and blood worms if the other fish are really aggressive feeders. And even if they're not particularly aggressive, they're just normally hungry fish, the same thing can happen. And if it's not happening, it's probably meaning that too much food is falling to the bottom. And it depends. There's a really careful balance to be struck there. So if food is falling to the bottom and sitting there for any length of time before the pandas get to it, that could be a problem, of course. I think you're very aware of that. But I just thought I'd bring that up. Sometimes the best is to feed the other fish and then during the day and then feed the panda quarries just as you're about to switch off the light. So the other fish are less likely to notice the food. And so, and feed them, of course, something that's quickly sinking so that they can get to it. That can often prevent some starvation issues with catfish without causing water quality issues by overfeeding. So there's just one point that direction. I really like your bio load that you mentioned. In a 29-gallon tank, you have 7 tetras, all of them are an inch or smaller, 2 thick-lipped dwarf grammies, which are about an inch long only, the pandas, there are 3 panda quarries that are about an inch, and a mono shrimp that's almost 2 inches, and a large dwarf grammy who is almost 2 inches. So the bio load is pretty good, especially for a tank that's been running about 5 months. That's not particularly crowded for 29. You can have those fish grow a bit and still be okay. So that's to be lauded, because many people just starting out in the hobby would grossly overstock a 29. I've seen 29-gallon tank with 6 koi in them. You remember that?
Yeah.
It's scary. So
really had room to turn
and,
around.
And some of them were, you know, almost a foot long. So scary, scary stuff. This is much better. So I think that's a very reasonable bio load. So I think you're on the right track there. I would also say, let's see, is there anything else I wanted to talk about with that? I think not. So we'll move on to the next email that Andreka mentioned, or message that she sent, where she mentioned that she thought it would be bad to move the quarry, which I applaud. I think that's true. One thing, she mentioned that they took the aerator out before they got the quarries. They had an aerator in there, and they do have a filter running, of course, but an additional aerator. And that they waited 2 weeks before doing a water change. And I liked this phrase. Our new rule is to maintain our sanity rather than getting torn up and killing ourselves about sick fish. I guess that's more than a phrase. It's actually a sentence. It's actually a complex compound sentence, as far as that goes.
The linguist in him coming out.
But, yes, that is often... Sometimes you have to make that choice. It's either your sanity or something going on with your fish in the sense of missing a water change. You know, missing a water change once in a while is really not going to make or break in most cases. I mean, it's true that I notice a difference in fish health when I do 2 water changes a week rather than 1. Just everything looks better. Everybody's happier. It's true. But I also, if I'm doing regular water changes and I miss one, if I'm doing regular weekly water changes and I miss just one, it's not going to be a big deal. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. Your sanity is also important. So there you go. I think it's time for the break.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
So, another thing that Andreka mentioned is that the top of the tank lately had looked oily on top. Could that have interfered with oxygen in the tank? Well, the answer is... What do you think?
Surface area?
Okay. Well, that's pretty close. It is surface and air exchange and so on. You're right, actually. Because
look at me!
To a large extent, you're right. Because surface area, of course, that's how we're... That area of the water, the surface area of the water, is where oxygen exchange is occurring, right? And if oil is covering a lot of that surface, then there's going to be less oxygen exchange and other gases.
What would
exchange.
The oil be from?
The oil is often from food.
That doesn't get eaten? Or
That doesn't get eaten, or it does get eaten, but when you drop it in, it has oils in it, and some
so
of them sort of wick out into the water,
and
onto the water surface. It can be from that. It can be from other biological processes going on inside the tank. It can be actually from cooking.
Like cooking oil sometimes, floating around in the air and landing on the water?
Yeah. Sometimes if you cook, and especially if you get some oil really hot, like you're frying something, and it floats up into the air and
sticks
it can
to your
land
kitchen
on your
ceiling
tank.
And it's awful to try to get off.
Yeah, but it can land on top of your tank depending on various factors.
So how do you get that off?
Well, that is a great question. And I'm going to tell
of those
you.
Sometimes. Okay.
There's two basic ways to do it. Oh, I should tell you another way that it can get there though first.
Okay.
Another way you can get an oily slick on there is from CO2. Especially do-it-yourself CO2. Sometimes if you do that, you end up with a sort of a slick on the water. It can also happen that when it looks like oil in the water and it's actually just some sort of dusty substance, but the effect is largely the same. So you want to know how to get rid of it, right?
I want to know how to get
okay.
rid of it. How do you get rid of it?
Two basic ways to get rid of it. One of them is the short-term solution. So if...
Like you stir the water...
Sort of. If you have a reoccurring issue, this is not the best solution. But if this is just a one-time thing, or just an initial addressing of the issue to be followed up by other steps, you get a piece of black and white newspaper, not glossy, you know, shiny kind, but just normal black and white newsprint, or a paper towel. And this is kind of tricky. It requires some finesse. You take the lid off and you gently set it down on top of the surface so that it blots up as much of the
goo.
Stuff as you can do at the same time. You don't want the newspaper reaching the surface at different times,
okay.
right? You kind of want to have it all...
You want it to go on flat all in one piece.
Flat all in one piece, and then you kind of pull it to the side and draw it off like a magician with the tablecloth. And... Draw it off.
So if you pick it straight back up, will the oil just come back
on? Some of it will probably drip back on. You can do that, and some of it will still stay in the newspaper, but I find it's a little better to do it like a magician. It feels more fun anyway. And you probably should have a mat or something near the tank, because you're going to get a few drops outside of the tank this way, or have a sack or something to catch it in, a plastic sack, something like that, because you'll need it to put that newspaper in. And if you need to do it several times, that's fine. Newspaper works fine, paper towels work fine, you know, something like that. You do it several times until there's no more scum on the surface.
Okay.
There you go. That's the short-term solution. Now, if it's just been that you know, were making donuts on the stove or something, and that's what settled on there, that's one thing, then you're probably done. You don't have to worry about it. If it's something going on inside the tank, you may have to address it in a more long-term way. So this is what I would suggest. Once again, talking about that surface and surface area, if you have some lipids, some oils, you know, sitting up there, there are bacteria that will digest them, but those bacteria need lots of oxygen. So it's good to get some surface turbulence to digest them. If you put an aerator in, that will break up the surface a little bit and tend to...
And so even though if you break up the surface of the mm-hmm. water, those things are still in the water, but the bacteria can digest them because they're getting more oxygen?
Yeah, that seems to be how it works, yeah. And so you can get rid of some of them just by encouraging the growth of bacteria right on that surface, and they'll eat them. That's what I've heard anyway. So it seems to work, I've noticed. You break up the surface area, it breaks up the oil, but it also keeps it from forming to some extent. And the explanation I've heard is that it's bacteria that are eating it. There are also filters that are equipped with skimmers. This is not the same as a protein skimmer in a marine tank. It's not what we're talking about. We're talking about freshwater situations here, and you can't use a protein skimmer in a freshwater tank because the water's not viscous enough. So, if there are some that have, as an attachment to the intake tube, they have a little floating apparatus that sucks water down right off the surface and down into the water, and then into the filter where it can be caught up on the filter media. And then you've solved the problem of taking the oil off. So that's another way to do that. I think it's Doctors Foster and Smith Aquatics. They sell a filter. I think it's their own brand, a filter that has a structure like that. But you can also add skimmers to other types of filters. Surface skimmers, I should say, so you don't confuse them with protein skimmers. But surface skimmers to other filters. So that's actually three ways to deal with it.
There you go.
I've even heard there are some fish that are supposed to eat some of that and reduce it. I don't have a whole lot of direct
kind of fish those are.
Experience with that, but some fish are supposed to try to ingest that kind of thing. We should, if anyone knows or uses fish to do that kind of thing, let us know, because I don't want to tell you the wrong species. I don't have any direct experience with dealing with it that way. excuse me. So the short answer is installing the aerator might be a good idea to help deal with that situation. And then Andreka had another question about a gourami. They had got a gourami. You know, there's so many different ways to pronounce that. I usually say gourami or gourami, but I've heard lots of different ways. So if you have a different way, that's cool. Whatever. Anyway, she said they have a good pet store where they purchased the corys, and they also purchased a gourami, but I said it seemed a bit slow and only gets a couple of bites, if at all, at feeding time. The other fish are much more assertive about food. And he may have some sort of vision problem or something. He sees some of the food and fails to notice other food that's close at hand. But he's starting to look better since they've been feeding him more. And one thing, fish can get along with a lot less food than often people think they can. You know, when we go on vacation, how long can we go without worrying about feeding our fish in general, unless we have fry?
About 2 weeks.
We've done up to 16 days, never lost a fish from doing that. I once had a betta that went on a hunger strike for 10 days right after I got it, because he didn't like pellets. I got him onto pellets, though, I'll tell you that.
He was being picky.
The only fish we've ever lost from having someone take care of our fish, we've lost one fish from having someone overfeeding our fish. When we were on vacation, but we've never lost a fish from going on vacation and not feeding them. So I generally tend to think that's a good sign, because fish, basically, when you think about it, they don't have to maintain their own body temperature. The water's doing that for them, as long as the water's maintained at the correct temperature. So they don't have to burn a lot of food to do that, and they don't have to swim nearly as much as they do in the wild, so they don't have to burn a whole lot there. So they really don't need a lot of fish food to keep them going, and their stomachs are about as big as their eyes in general. So that's not a lot of food that they need to get filled up. So there are cases when fish can starve.
Sometimes their stomachs their eyes are bigger than their stomachs.
Sometimes their eyes are bigger than their stomachs. Yes, certain fish will overeat. That's true.
Just like certain people.
Yes. I had a bit of it. Oh, that was terrible. He overate so ridiculously much on insects that I used to feed him when I was a kid. Man, that was just cruel. I didn't mean to be cruel, but...
You were a kid.
I was a kid. Okay. So, that's just one thing to think about, that fish really don't need to eat all that much. And it is true that fish can starve, and like I talked about before, especially fish like Cory cats and other bottom feeders, if they don't get enough food down there where it's accessible, they can have issues. But in general, it's kind of difficult to starve a fish as long as they're getting some food. Well, we're talking about adult or semi-adult fish here. Young fry can starve fairly quickly. But there you go.
Alrighty.
Now, I think that's just about it for this episode.
Lovely.
So, please send us messages.
Yep, just keep them coming.
Whether it be YouTube or Facebook or Twitter or email or Google Voice. Remember, if you have a landline that doesn't have long distance charges, you can call us on Google Voice for free. And you can also just send us an MP3 or WAV file free, and that will work too. So we hope you get in contact with us soon.
Have a lovely fishy week.
Yes. Enjoy your fish. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.